Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Tuesday, June 28th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host with my co-host Chris Drew. Got a new setup. The studio looking legit. Got lighting. Look at us leveling Chris up. Not a lot to talk about, but a lot to address, yeah. I guess, because this shit it's out of control. It is just fucking out of control. The clickbait to pull on the heartstrings of college football fans. And here we are. I mean, I put the headline out. We will play along, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you who the preseason All-Americans are, because now apparently Caleb Williams is a better player than C.J. Stroud from the Walter Camp Foundation, and Mikey Coppola, the president, who the fuck knows who that is. He's a cigar guy. I mean, what the fuck he knows, and his team of evaluation men. It's absurd, but it's fun. It's fun to poke fun at the fucking idiots that put stuff out, and then literally, like, they'll have marketing campaigns around it. And so we're going to talk about that. Going to talk about the preseason All-Americans. Going to talk about some recruiting info. Also, huge momentum at Texas. As since Arch Manning has committed, 7 new players have committed to Texas, the latest being a 5-star safety. So the impact is resounding. Getting a player of that Arch with that last name, really, right? Mm-hmm. The Manning last name is what it is. But we knew it would happen. It happens with every big-time quarterback. That's why getting Dylan Raiola was such a big deal for Ohio State. Bryce Young when he went to Alabama. C.J. Stroud to Ohio State after winning the Elite 11 MVP. All those things are so impactful in recruiting because why? Players want to play with great players. Mm-hmm. And a great quarterback is the number one indicator for future success. So if kids buy in that Arch Manning is the real deal, they're going to want to sign up to play for Texas. So Texas has to, you know, capture that momentum and utilize it. I see we've got some Michigan fans in the chat. I have a quote to read to you today, and we'll start we'll switch it up and start the show off with this. Someone sent me this from a Michigan message board, and it's really indicative of Michigan and where they're at. And just remember this when Michigan is completely irrelevant in the future. This was from a 1989 UM grad. He said, "I can't understand why anyone would want Michigan participating in this hot mess," talking about NIL. "All due respect to Miami or Texas Tech or Michigan State or Tennessee, but Michigan is an elite academic and research institution and has a reputation to uphold. Go ahead and accuse me of Michigan arrogance if you'd like. I'm just stating the truth. With all due respect to Michigan fans who are not Michigan grads, but I do find that most of the people who are angry about Michigan's approach to NIL and who are in the Fire Ward crowd are non-alums. I'd rather see the team go 6-6 every year than stoop to this level. You're also deluding yourself if you think this isn't going to cause issues in the locker room." I will stop there. But Michigan fans, you are all inferior.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan grads of the world, and you don't matter. Football doesn't matter. This is a prestigious academic institution of research and academic rigor. How dare you expect football successes on the field? We are Michigan men, and we care about academia first.
I went to
That's
Michigan.
That's why,
man.
Jim Harbaugh's not playing the game, because he cares about research for fucking, I don't know, engineering or whatever Michigan. Yeah.
Research for gardening is what we like. We want to discover that new plant.
Research.
Right. I went to Michigan one time and for a wedding, and I was at this table. I was with actually some doctors, which I obviously didn't belong. And they were talking about Walmart Wolverines. And I asked what it was, Zach. And they were like, "Oh, those are the people that don't go to Michigan, but rep Michigan and are the most passionate about Michigan. Because if you're a Walmart Wolverine, you worry about the sports. If you're not, you worry about the research centers." And I'm like, well, call me a motherfucking Walmart Buckeye because I am not worried about, I do not care.
Well, I mean, Michigan's a great academic school, but at some point, I mean, we're talking about sports here. Right. I know
that's
they're
my
a good
mom went
school.
To school, Zach. Fun fact, my mom went to Michigan.
Oh, we know. I know at least.
She earned her master's from Penn State. She was doing everything she could to avoid Ohio State. I'm not sure why. Not sure what happened, but
well, I mean, we don't need to disclose your mom's age, but Ohio State was not always a strong academic school. I mean, when I was coming out of high school, which I would imagine I'm a little bit younger than your mom. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ohio State was starting to improve, but you know,
she's 48, Zach, so I don't know how old you are.
She's 10 years older than me. So back when she was coming out of school, Ohio State was literally check the pulse, got one, you're in. So it certainly has improved its academic reputation since then. But she definitely made the right choice.
Yeah, no, she's doing all right. And she gave birth to an absolute champion, an absolute menace. I did not graduate from either of those schools or graduate in general, but Zach, this is not about me.
Chris, it's a Walmart Buckeye.
I am a Walmart Buckeye, and I love Georgia Tech also, which I did not get into that school, but that's neither here nor there. I don't hold grudges. Zach, what the fuck is a preseason All-American, and why do people even come up with these lists? Like, what are we doing? So if you missed it, if you were under a Buckeye Twitter rock yesterday, the preseason All-American list came out. There's a couple Buckeyes on it. Travion Henderson, JSN, Duwan Jones, and Noah Ruggles all made it. And CJ Stroud did not. That's the one that's missing and kind of threw me a little bit for a twist. And this was supposed to be the more reputable preseason All-American award. I'm not sure what that even means or who even celebrates the All-American
award. Well, what is a preseason award? That's the question, right? Because a preseason award, what are they basing it off of? Did they study spring ball film? Did they talk to strength coaches? Did they do their research, right? NFL scouts are the best indication of where kids have progressed in the offseason. Not that they put out a ranking, but these foundations. I just told you, Michael Coppola, fucking cigar guy, is the president. Like, there's not people with football knowledge, let alone the fact there's not people that are researching and interviewing coaches and finding out how CJ Stroud's offseason, what's Caleb Williams doing. They click articles, read what ESPN puts out there, and they drive a narrative train, and they don't drive it, they ride it. They jump on a train and ride that dick is what they do. And they sit there and they say, Caleb Williams is going to be a second team All-American because we have read that he's going to have a great year because the headlines from ESPN say so. Lincoln Riley moved teams. Caleb Williams is going to be better. In reality, the only thing of value they have to base it on is last year's film, last year's analytics. And if they base it on that, it's not even remotely close. I'm not saying Caleb Williams won't be a second team All-American, but they're basing these preseason rankings on complete bullshit. I mean, CJ Stroud threw higher 20% better completion percentage over 20 yards on deep balls. I mean, better completion percentage overall, better completion percentage under pressure, better completion percentage versus base defense, blitz defense. Every analytic, he was a better quarterback than Caleb Williams from the body of work we have. To sit here and try to fucking say Caleb Williams is better than CJ Stroud, you have to scratch your head and say, hey guys, based on what? What tells you he's going to be better? What tells you he is better now? And the answer is not a fucking thing. Not to them, because they don't have a clue what has went on. They're a bunch of fucking cigar guys in suits, Italian guys sitting around sipping fucking whatever, not probably some expensive bourbon I don't even know about, talking about, well, I heard this boy Lincoln got, he supposed to be really good. And then they put him in a second team All-American. It's like, the fuck? Go fucking sell your cigars and shut the fuck up and stay out of college football. You don't know what you're talking about. And so we sit here today and you can give credence and weight to these preseason rankings, but they don't matter. I don't give a shit if CJ Stroud was first team All-American. If he goes out and doesn't play well, guess what? He won't be. And it just is what it is. It's all nonsense. It's all for clickbait. It's all for attention. And ultimately, it's decisions made by people who don't know what the fuck they're talking about, which is all too common in college football.
It is, and it's crazy, Zach, because here's the issue. The debate should be C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. That's the debate that I'm open to
have.
That's
the only debate there is.
The fact that we're discussing C.J. Stroud versus Caleb Williams is fucking disgusting. It's gross. It's like they would have done themselves more favors by putting C.J. Stroud as the number two there and then having an Ohio State versus Alabama debate. Now you got all these Ohio State fans arguing whether it should be him or Caleb Williams, and that's not a debate that I care to have because it's stupid. Because in no world is Caleb Williams even remotely better than C.J. Stroud was last year. And that's what they should be about. Who was the better player last year? And we'll talk about Vegas, too. You talked about NFL scouts knowing things. Vegas also knows things. And fact of the matter is, the Heisman favorite going into the season is none other than C.J. Stroud. So for him not to be on the preseason All-American list makes your preseason All-American list not valid. That's my take on it.
Well, it's not valid, and it's unfortunate that it came from the Walter Camp Foundation, because that is a more reputable source. It's one thing if it's fucking like the Sports Illustrated preseason All-American team, or you know, some woke media member that put out an All-American team that he just decided what it is. It's totally different. This is a foundation that raises a lot of money, and there's a lot of weight put into the Walter Camp designation of being an All-American. And so, honestly, if I was the president of the Walter Camp Foundation, which we should fucking campaign for that, we'd do away with preseason anything. Fuck the rankings, fuck the All-Americans, get rid of all that shit and just say, hey, a lot like the CFP rankings, a lot like back in the day when the BCS rankings came out, it's like, no, we're not going to say anything because we don't know. This team could have come together. I mean, for all we know, Penn State has had the best offseason in the history of the program. They're going to have the best training camp ever, and they might be the team to beat in the Big Ten. I mean, I wouldn't bet that. It's probably not the case, but it could be true. And until we see the product on the field in the fall early, who are we to say who is preseason anything? It's nonsense, complete nonsense. And that's why you won't get a preseason top 10 from me. And if it is, it's going to be based on who's returning, how well they played last year, and some projection of an offseason that is honestly just a guess.
I mean, you might get one from me because I'm a fan and I love participating in fan activities.
Right.
Well, I'm from the other side of it, Zach. That's why this works. Like, you're from the real side where shit matters. I'm from the side where I can say whatever I want and be wrong 100 times. And everyone's like, oh, like, you know, he's right sometimes. But now I get to piggyback off you. So that's fun. But Zach, it's funny because it's kind of been a trend, I think, moving forward. Maybe I'm being sensitive. You tell me. Is disrespecting C.J. Stroud, is that like a fun thing? Is that a fun, cool thing?
I guess it seems like it. I mean, from Desmond Howard disrespecting CJ and Ohio State on the Heisman stage to honestly, Ohio State's it's an ESPN anti-narrative, right? ESPN does not like Ohio State because they don't have any vested interest financially. And that's why Dwayne Haskins goes to New York City. He's not even in the interview for the candidates. And he has the best stats and the best numbers. If you just base it on film and stats, which is what the award essentially should be, like,
supposed to be, right?
He should have won it, right? But and not only should he have won it, but he certainly should have got interviewed, but he didn't even get interviewed. And so the narrative driving against Ohio State is strong with ESPN. And that's where a lot of this starts. And if you really want to boil down to it, you look at what's going on with Disney and ESPN and all the woke culture that is going on there. They drive narratives hardcore. And whereas you don't feel like Fox Sports drives those narratives, and if they do, it's certainly a counterpoint, a lot like a CNN versus Fox News. They're on the other side of it, right? They have a vested interest in the Big Ten. So they're going to hype CJ Stroud up. I bet Fox Sports will have CJ Stroud as some form or fashion of an All-American, because that's what these people do. They drive narratives. I mean, it's all money-based, right? Follow the money.
It is all money-based. Zach, before we get into the next topic I wanted to touch, I do want to propose a question for the chat and for the comment section afterwards. How would Ohio State fare if they were in the SEC? Would they win? Would they go undefeated? One loss, two loss, three loss? Let me know how they would be. Do you think they would drop any games to any bad teams, or would they absolutely run the SEC? Let us know in the comment section below and let us know in the chat. We do like the live discussion going on over there. I mean, I love it. I don't know how Zach feels about it, but I absolutely love it. My next point, though, my next little topic, Zach, Florida. The Florida Gators Collective has come out, and they said, we didn't offer anybody money. We didn't offer anybody anything. It's all a lie. We're operating within NCAA rules, even though we have representation from the kid coming out saying, hey, we turned down $11.5 million to go to Miami.
Exactly. Right. And here's the reality. Nobody knows any of that stuff's true. And the point of yesterday's show was entirely to call out the attorney that was spouting off in an interview, because not only is it ridiculous that he's even telling people this stuff, but it's also illegal. That was the point of the show, not to talk about the kid that committed to Miami, not to talk about all those numbers that are just being thrown out there. But as we saw with Texas A&M, what was the first thing that happened after, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. If Texas A&M spent X amount of dollars on the recruiting class, that number may not be right, but they didn't just create it. They didn't just pick a number and say, this is what it is. And it's like, oh, in fact, they spent $0. That's never the case. So where there's smoke, there's fire. And where there's reporting and news and these news stories catch wind and catch some momentum, you're always going to get that pushback of, whoa, 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 we didn't offer anything because it's illegal. What are you talking about? Immediately, you're going to get the backtracking. So, of course, Florida didn't offer him anything. Of course, he didn't get offered anything to go to Miami. Of course, all of that didn't happen because that's illegal. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're going to say that, but it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And the numbers may be fudged or off. It doesn't matter to the point. The point is that this attorney came out and offered up dollar amounts, and he's a fucking idiot for it.
Here's the issue also with this. You know what I would tell schools, Zach? As the Twitter Spaces thing kind of takes off, the one thing I would tell schools, as a school, I would tell boosters, stop going in Twitter Spaces and offering up numbers. Like, literally just stop opting in them, dog. Because that's what's happening, Zach. Like, the booster that made the deal for Miami, I was in a Twitter space 2 days ago. He opted in it and was bragging about getting Miami kids deals and talking about dollars. It's like, we have to be smarter than that. Like obviously, like, it's like 4th of July fireworks. Everyone's shooting them off. It's illegal. But just don't shoot them off in front of the fucking, you know, police station.
Yeah, and certainly don't go on Facebook Live and say, hey, in 2 hours, we're shooting off illegal fireworks. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So just don't do that. But my next question, Zach, is do you expect the NCAA to do anything about this, or are they just going to pretend like they're not on social media?
No, they're. I mean, they might do some bullshit, like look into it, but they have created a beast that they can't contain. So that there's, I don't know what they could do. What are they going to do? Unless there's a physical contract, which I can't imagine anyone stupid enough to give the kid a physical contract, like a paper copy contract, to show him the NIL deals. This is all verbal contracts and verbal promises that honestly don't hold any weight. So I can't imagine that there's anything the NCAA could find.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And not to mention what I don't think is going to get talked about ever is that the boosters and the lawyers don't have to cooperate with the NCAA. Like, they are not law enforcement. Is no warrant. Like, if NCAA comes to your door, Zach, you're a booster, it says, knock, knock, I want to see the deal you did with Tyrone Gibson. What are you going to say? Go fuck yourself and shut the door. Like,
who are you? You have no precedence here. You have no jurisdiction over me.
Yeah, exactly. So get off my property. NCAA, I don't expect to ever do anything. All right, Zach, my next little topic, I wanted to ask you, you obviously frontline recruiting for a long, long time. There's been some like recruiting drama, rumors of a decommitment coming, rumors of this, rumors of that. There was a kid that's committed to Ohio State that took a visit to Auburn. An official visit. And I guess Ohio State staff didn't love that, and they started to float around for other kids. How did you treat, you know, kids taking official visits, and did kids ever try to keep those a secret from you, or did you like hearing about them beforehand?
No, I mean, if a kid kept it a secret from you, that's when you knew it was probably over. I mean, every kid is different, right? But it does come down to, like, if you get engaged and then your fiance is out going on dates with other men, it's like, wait a minute, we're not engaged. Like, I need to, if it's a receiver prospect that is committed to you but going on other visits, you need to be recruiting other receivers, because that kid obviously is still looking around and not sure that Ohio State is where he's going to go or whatever school. So it happens. The only way to do it is on the front end with transparency, and say the kid could, you know, I've had situations where, like, Johnny Dixon was one where the kid was like, I want to take all five of my visits. Like, I want to go see some places. It's like, all right, that's fine. Now, he didn't commit till after the fact, but if he committed before the fact, we would have known, because he was still tripping and visiting places, that's not done yet. And we can't count that one as a for sure kid that's coming to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. So it's a part of the game. It happens. And if it's one of your higher prospects on your board, you're going to accept it and deal with it and do what you have to do, to get through it and try to keep recruiting the shit out of them to try to get them in the end. But if it's a mid-tier prospect, a kid that, you know, you feel like is a good player, might, you know, maybe a developmental player, you can absolutely put your foot down and say, if you're tripping elsewhere, this commitment's over, we're going to go find somebody else and pressure the kid. Because then it's like, all right, there's two sides to a commitment here. You commit to us, we commit to you. If we commit to you and hold your spot as one of our two safeties we're taking in this class, and you're out flirting with other schools, fuck off. We're going to go find somebody else, because we can't be left with only one safety in this class. And you can tell a kid that. And then it's up to him. You want to trip other places? Ohio State's not an option anymore. If you want to go to Ohio State and you really think that's the place for you, you probably should shut it down and not visit anywhere else and have a mutual actual commitment.
Right. And it's the Seth Hawkins kid. He's a SFE kid, a really talented player, but seems to kind of be flirting with other places and not loving the numbers thing. Like, obviously, Ohio State's going to have to take a lot of safeties every year because of the Jim Knowles safety system. And if that kid feels like he's going to end up getting recruited over, that could lead to this. But how did you manage letting kids know that you were going to take three or four, and they were, and they might be the lowest rated out of them, but you still view them in high regards?
Well, you just got to show them numbers, right? You show them numbers. How many safeties are on scholarship at whatever schools they're looking at? How many safeties you have? How many safeties each school puts on the field? Show them film, because ultimately it's about, all right, am I going to have a chance to be a starter? That's what you want, right? So if you're playing three safeties and you only have five on scholarship, it's like, all right, if you come in with three other safeties, that makes eight. You need to be in the top three of eight to start, in the top five of eight to play. Mm-hmm. And so it's all a numbers game, and you just have to be honest with them and show them what other schools do. I mean, it's no different than back, you know, early in my career when Nick Saban was running a pro formation offense. And it's like, yeah, you could go to Bama. They, you know, we have more receivers than they have. We play three, they play two. They throw it to only one of the two, we throw it to all three. So what are the odds you're getting catches, right? It's honest conversation about, it's all about opportunity. Are you going to go there and have the opportunity to develop and show how good of a player you are so that you can achieve your dream of, you know, playing major college football and maybe going to the NFL? And if that opportunity is better at one place or another, that is one box checked mm-hmm. for that school in the process. And then it comes down to what are you really using to evaluate where you should go to school? Right. So it is what it is. If you're going to take three, four receivers in every class, they just need to know, well, we play three and rotate another three. So if you're in the top half of our group, you're going to play, and then you're going to have the opportunity. And then that's all a kid can ask for.
I do want to ask you about another situation that kind of popped up. So one of Ohio State's top wide receiver targets that we missed out on, Zachariah Branch. He was 1 point, Zach, a Ohio State silent, longtime lean, until Lincoln Riley got the job at USC. Now the kid's dream school is USC. He didn't want to go there. It was a dumpster fire, but then since committed to them over Ohio State. Those were his final two schools. Now the kid is back out taking visits. He landed an official visit with A&M and is posting all over the place with Jimbo. Did you ever encounter this? And did a kid committing somewhere else and you stop recruiting him, and then you see him on another official visit, do you circle back? Like, when the streets lose a good hoe and then the good hoe gets back to the streets, it's like you almost.
I mean, it's all situational, right? Does Ohio State still need and want him? I mean,
Ohio
they just
State
went on
doesn't
a run.
Need and want him, I don't think. Well,
exactly. So then, no, it's like, hey, you had your chance. We got, you know, three, four kids that we love. So that ship has sailed. And a lot of times those kids that are wishy-washy like that, right? Commit, decommit. They go back to my Tyjon Lindsey conversation. Really talented slot receiver, return kid. Committed, decommitted all the time. I mean, he committed to us, committed to Nebraska, went to Nebraska, transferred from Nebraska at Oregon State. I think he's either still at Oregon State or maybe at UNLV. Doesn't matter. But those kids, they often don't pan out because they're focus isn't where it needs to be, and that's not likely to change, right? Mm-hmm. You get a kid that's all over the place committing all these places, then they end up coming to your school. Is their focus going to be on, like, actually developing and putting in the time and focusing on becoming a great player because they lacked it prior to coming? Are they going to just magically have it? So a lot of times those kids don't pan out anyways. Yeah.
It was really interesting because the way his commitment went down, first of all, he's a very similar prospect to me, at least to Tyjon, and obviously I'll let you throw on tape and decide that. Smaller slot receiver, very shifty, from Bishop Gorman. USC was his dream school, like, from a kid growing up, committed there. And Ohio State at that point was like, all right, we're not going to commit with a kid's childhood school. Like we're not going to, you know, push with that. Like, that's done. We'll go elsewhere. And he hasn't taken any visits until this past weekend, the Jimbo visit. And it feels like A&M is throwing money on money. And
hey, they got bags.
I'm saying they got USC bags. Has bags too. Zach, USC has bags. So if he's out there doing that, is he signaling, hey, USC up the price, or you think he's a real flip candidate?
Hey, there's a value, right? There's a value on every kid. And if there's demand elsewhere, entertaining that demand will either get you a bigger deal or it might increase demand where you want to go, right? It's no different than the conversation I've had for the past 6 months of eventually these big time players at every school will jump in the portal just to increase their salary either elsewhere or back at their old school, right? Because you have a value, a shelf life. And I mean, this kid's like, I want to go to USC. And then he starts hearing about money at Texas A&M. He's like, wait, how much? Hold on. Let me take a look at that. And he might flirt with it, entertain it, and then if USC can either jump off the top rope and offer him something bigger and better, or just hope that he comes because he grew up with USC underwear on.
Yeah. Well, I think that USC is going to end up in the price. I think it's definitely flirting. His brother currently plays there, and his other highly regarded prospect that Ohio State wanted to play safety. So, I mean, I think he's playing the game. And, Zach, I don't blame him. At some point, the transfer portal is going to be like restricted free agency in the NBA. It's like guys could go to other teams that they weren't interested in signing, get an offer, and take it back to their team and be like, look, you better offer me this or I'm out. This time, there's no contract binding stuff. So they could do whatever they want. So, yeah, that's going to happen. That's dangerous. Zach, Ohio State landed a commitment yesterday. They got the Kyan Lee kid from Georgia, formerly a Georgia commit. He's a corner. He's a hard hitter. And I just, you know, I know you haven't had a chance to watch a ton of them, but I wanted to ask you kind of initial thoughts on him and what are the most important traits for a corner, and do you think he projects as a corner moving forward?
Yes, so I don't know much about the kid. I did watch his highlight tape, and he's a zone corner, which is fine, but a lot of times those guys project to safeties. But he doesn't shy away from contact. You don't see a lot of him, you know, lockdown corner coverage, like playing man-to-man, or most of his interceptions are just poor throws. I mean, you got to evaluate the film as you see it, not just, oh, this kid caught a ball that was thrown to him. But, you know, the kid might be a great player. Obviously, Ohio State has evaluated him thoroughly. And I think just recruiting momentum, they get a commitment. They took a commitment, so they must love him wherever they project him. But, you know, beating Georgia on a kid, if that's really what happened, is always a good thing, especially down there.
Yeah. No, it's big time. And this was kind of the first big battle for Tim Walton. This is the first time we saw Tim, the new corners coach, go in and swing away and get a kid. And it's a good sign because obviously to get a 4-star from Georgia, you and I talked about, Zach, how difficult that is. Now we'll see if he actually signs with Ohio State is something that I think is of note, because like you said, guys that decommit and flip all the time, it's tough. And that's
in
Georgia.
And I know, you know, it's tough to compare a high school prospect to the defense we just watched at Georgia, but that kid, when I watched his film, he didn't look like a Georgia corner, what I've just watched for the last 2 years. Maybe a safety, maybe he projects elsewhere, but he didn't look like a corner that I think Georgia would be heavily recruiting. That's not to knock the kid. He might be a great player and wherever he plays. But he didn't, when I watched it, I wasn't like, oh yeah, this is definitely one of those freak shows we just watched playing for Georgia.
Yeah, but this could be, Zach, the first Georgia domino. Obviously, the kid that's the big fish down there, Caleb Downs. I know Perry Eliano is pushing hard to get him. So maybe it continues in Georgia. We also have more commitments on the way. Zach, they've been debating in the chat, how would Ohio State do in the SEC this next year? How do you think they would do if they were in the SEC next year? Would they have one loss, two loss?
It would all come down to schedules. And I've talked about the SEC with who's returning and kind of the trajectory of those programs. I think it would come down to Ohio State, Bama. They'd be the best two teams. Some of these asinine takes that they would have three losses. They couldn't beat LSU and Georgia and all these teams back to back to back. The Ohio State is right now the second best team in the country, and they will push Bama to be the best team in the country. And that's just based on returning production and, you know, a projection of the offseason. Like I said, I don't do preseason rankings, but to say that they would go down there and lose to Georgia, Florida, or LSU is just fucking nuts. Like, you look at the talent they have coming back, the production they have coming back, the production lost at Georgia. To say that Ohio State would be second fiddle to Georgia in the SEC is just nuts for 2022. Last year, yeah, they would have been. Georgia would have been, I mean, it would have been a bad deal.
Yeah, dogs, so no pun intended.
It's year to year, right? But this year specifically, I think Ohio State could be the lead horse in that conference. It would come down to them and Bama.
Mm-hmm. All right, Zach, I asked you about high school football yesterday between two states, Florida and Georgia. I'm going to ask again. I got the death beam out. Better high school football, Texas or California?
Ooh. It is funny because TikTok is such a volatile place. The question yesterday was Florida versus Georgia, and I gave my opinion, and a bunch of people were like, you're a fucking idiot. It's Texas. And I'm like, what? He said Florida or Georgia. But Texas or California, you got to go Texas. And that's mainly just because of the overall general makeup of the kid, right? Both have talented players. Both have great coaching. But generally speaking, and this is definitely stereotypical, the California kids are not as tough as the Texas kids. They're not as hardworking as the Texas kids. They have that surfer mentality almost. And so generally speaking, Texas football is king when you're comparing the two states. I would take a kid from Texas all day. They're extremely well coached. A lot of these schools are massive. It's almost like colleges. The competition they face daily, the competition they've had in practice, and the competition they played against in games is second to none. So Texas is probably the best state in the country for high school football, and California is in the top four. So it's a good comparison, but I think Texas wins on pretty much every front. I mean, they're one of the fastest states in the country, one of the best athletes in the country. They produce linemen. They produce every position. They've had some great quarterbacks come out of the state of Texas. You look at the starting quarterbacks in the NFL over the last 20 years, a boatload of them came from Texas. So it's hard to dispute Texas when you're talking about them versus anyone.
I just want to throw this up here, Zach. This goes for the roast of the day.
Chris Drew looks like Michael V. Drake and Earthworm Jim's love child.
That's roast of the day, my man, MP.
That you win the crown. That's for sure.
Menace Cook. I mean, I've been getting cooked for a while, dog. I've been chilling in large part. All right, Zach. I have one more thing. Unless you want to add anything before we get out of here. You were getting killed about the C.J. Stroud toughness take. You said that he doesn't have like true competitive toughness, or not a true competitor the way you would see. And people are like, oh, like he scratches way up top. Like, yeah, he's competitive. I want to let you have a chance to clarify or defend your take, because I didn't think you were saying he wasn't competitive. I think you were saying he didn't have competitive toughness, and that's kind of the difference in the two. So, Zach, is C.J. Stroud as competitive as you would like him to be as a quarterback?
I mean, C.J. Stroud is different than most competitors. It's not that he doesn't have the desire to win, the desire to be great. It's not that he doesn't work hard. It's just he doesn't have that internal fire to competitively take over games outside of throwing the football, which is great that he can do that. So is he competitive? Yeah, he's competitive. But I would like to see more out of C.J. Stroud this fall, competing and just kind of gritting his way into a first down, taking a scramble when it's available, like utilizing every facet of his game to take over games, because he has held back on running with the football, whether it be self-preservation, doesn't want to get hurt, just tries to do everything with his arm, whatever the reason, that shows a slight lack of competitive nature because he's not willing to do those things to impact the game even further. And that's where I want to see growth out of him. It's not that he's not competitive. It's not that he won't do those things this fall and prove that he is an ultra competitor. But I heard a story from an LSU lineman talking about Joe Burrow when they were in the red zone. And C.J. Stroud does not do this, right? They went into a red zone period, and Coach O came on and he said, hey, I want good on good, ones on ones, best players in. Let's go. Let's compete. And they went in. Joe Burrow did a play action, rolled out, threw a ball, and Patrick Queen was kind of secondary contained coming after him. And he went a little too hard, one step too far, and he kind of hit Joe Burrow a little bit, which you don't do. You don't hit your quarterback. Usually that leads to a fight. The offensive linemen fight you because you don't hit your franchise in practice, right? And the guy said the most eye-opening thing in the world was the first person to throw a punch was Joe Burrow. It wasn't the lineman. Joe Burrow went back at Patrick Queen and threw a punch, and a little scuffle broke out. And then Joe Burrow looked at Coach O and was like, hey, I'm live. Fuck this. This period's going, and I don't give a shit when you say it's over. I'll tell you when it's over. And he proceeded to dice that defense up in and out every different way for 15 straight minutes and then ended the period himself. That's the competitive nature that I think that a great player needs to have. That's why Joe Burrow's doing what he's doing in the NFL. That's why he had the season he had at LSU. That's what I need to see from C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud, if he got hit accidentally by a linebacker in practice, would be like, come on, man, what is that? Right? But he ain't throwing a punch. He might hurt his hand. Joe Burrow's like, fuck, boom. Like, don't hit me. Like, I'm the quarterback. What are you doing? And was like, bullshit. All right, you want to hit me? Let's fucking play. And he went after their ass and diced them the fuck up. That's what I'm looking for in C.J. Stroud. I think he's capable, but it's got to come out. He's got to get pissed.
I agree, and I think I'll add on to that point a little bit, Zach. With Joe Burrow, that little story, that little microcosm, you can drop that into the games you watch of him. You can feel Joe Burrow's competitive nature when he steps out on the field. You cannot feel the same with C.J. Stroud. Now, there is a competitive fire in him, but the one that Joe Burrow has is like you dumped gasoline on the candle. And that's what I think matters. And what I think you're saying, and a lot of people don't understand, is the quarterbacks, the top-end quarterbacks, you want them to be the 1%. But then you want guys to be the 1% of the 1%, the absolute psychos, the ones who, no matter what, you can feel their competitiveness on the field. Tim Tebow, Joe Burrow, Bryce Young. You can feel the competitive edginess that comes with it, and it creates a culture on the entire offense that elevates everybody. Until CJ Stroud's competitive nature elevates everybody, I think your stance is right. We need him to get a little bit more competitive and show more competitive toughness. The same way you talked about just your first time seeing Dwayne Haskins and he looked at you and daggers through the eyes, like you knew it was go time, or JT Barrett in the locker room before the game, daggers through the eyes, you knew it was go time. You can feel that in play styles, and you can feel that when guys play, and not saying you can't throw a pretty ball and do all the cute stuff and still not be competitive. Like, you could do that and still be a competitive freak like Joe Burrow. But what you're saying is you haven't seen it from CJ Stroud yet, and I think anybody who's told you they has is lying to your face, unless they're on that field.
And it's all, what is the bar? What are we trying to maximize CJ Stroud into, right? Do we want him to just, are our expectations that he is a really good passing quarterback and going to win a lot of games and put up a bunch of stats? Or do we want to desire something greater out of CJ Stroud because we think he's capable, right? Mm-hmm. I could sit here and sing his praises and jerk him off like all these other Ohio State fans, but the reality is he has the skill and talent to be one of those generational players, like a Joe Burrow, like a Peyton Manning, like a Kobe Bryant, like a Michael Jordan. He's that skilled, but he's missing a piece that all those other guys that I just mentioned had. And if he can find it, you're talking about, I mean, we'll talk about him for 20 years, 30 years. And that's where my expectation is. And if he doesn't reach there, he'll still reach really high, right? Shoot for the stars and you'll land in the clouds. He'll be up there somewhere. But the maximized version of CJ Stroud has some Mamba mentality inside of him that I've never seen. That is the best version of him. If he can find it, watch the fuck out.
And not just get it in spark sack. Like, if he can get it and turn it on for four quarters, the way Joe Burrow did against Clemson when he was tapping the ring on his finger after two quarters, like, it's game time. I know it's my turn. I know what I've done to get here. That kind of energy leads to the overall toughness of a team. I don't care what anybody says. Zach, that's all I got today. You got anything else?
No, that's it. I appreciate everybody. Menace out.